Cambridge Breakfast with Julian Clover
across our university city and South Cambridgeshire.
Cambridge 105 Radio.
And my After Nine guest this morning is Diane Louise Jordan, who is a Cambridgeshire resident, don't you know? You'll be familiar with her, of course, from Blue Peter, Songs of Praise, many other places as well. She's been working on a dedicated portal, themakingofblackbritain.org. It's a living public oral archive of history, inviting every colour, class and creed from generation to generation to share their story, exploring their history and present-day experiences. With a bit of luck, Diane is on the line now. Morning to you.
Good morning, good morning.
Thank you very much for coming on. Tell me, how did the making of Black Britain first begin?
Well, it started from my personal experience. Julian, I'm first generation Black British. I was born in 1960, and so my parents came in the early to mid 50s, and they're what some people now describe as the Windrush generation. Yeah.
The Windrush was just one ship, wasn't it, I think? But there's obviously a whole collection of people coming in from different parts and on different vessels.
Yeah, it's interesting, actually, because there is actually a discussion about what it means to be the part of the Windrush generation, because you're absolutely right. There was only about 500 people who came in 1948 on the Windrush. But it was actually to do with the Nationality Act that was passed in 1948, that and a number of other things that sort of came around that, but essentially that was the trigger for people from the former colonies and dominions who were always British subjects, and then through this act became British citizens, to come to mainland Britain. And because up until that point, Britain had actually been going out to other countries, and there was much more emigration than immigration for hundreds of years before.
I'm trying to remember the phrase of people who they received a certain amount of cash to go to Australia, for example, from Britain. Australia encouraging people to go, which probably might have been sort of, I guess, it was more sort of maybe 50s and 60s. But it's interesting, people coming in different directions. I guess they've always done, up to a greater or lesser extent.
Well, that's the point. Actually, you know what the truth is? That there was much, much more emigration before this Act in 1948 from all around the world. And it's interesting that you mentioned Australia, because Australia and Canada and New Zealand and South Africa, these countries were part of the Commonwealth, as well as, the Caribbean countries and some of the, India, Pakistan and Bangladesh and some parts of Africa. The globe was British. And obviously that's our heritage, because of the, the colonizing venture of Britain as part of its empire for hundreds of years.
Britain at that time, we needed people, didn't we? We needed people. Well, I guess, ironically, as we do now, we need people to fill in the jobs.
Well, it was a very interesting time, actually, because it was just after the war. I think our country was in a really vulnerable position, because even though, yes, technically we had won the war, it had cost a lot in terms of, what it cost to us as human beings in this country and the look of the country. And so funnily enough, a lot of people of working age were fleeing the country and going to live in Canada or New Zealand or Australia. They wanted to set up a new life, because our country was quite devastated. Mm. And so there was a lot of work to be done. And so there were organisations like the NHS, London Transport Museum, the railways, National Health, who were actually actively going into Caribbean countries. My parents came from Jamaica, and Jamaica is one of the countries where they were actively going in and paying people's fares to come to the UK to help rebuild the country. Mm-hmm. So that very much was part of what was happening then.
And one of the things I like, I think I had a quick look yesterday evening at the web, just call it the website, doesn't really do it justice, really. But the looking at the history of Black Britain platform. It's ordinary people. It's not, you know, necessarily it's not the captain of the ship. It's people who were around and you're getting them to tell their stories.
Well, the thing is, we all make up the history of this country. We all make up the history of the world, all of us. And, you know, normally history is told by, you know, maybe one, you know, very famous person, or, you know, somebody who's
invariably somebody on the winning side, isn't it, really?
And somebody on the winning side. But what we find in real life is that we all make history. Each and every one of us has a story that is really important to tell, every colour, every class, every creed, every generation. And unless we hear the stories from the mouths of, you know, real men and women, we're not really going to get a full understanding of what our history is. And it's interesting that just in the last couple of years, particularly since, you know, what happened to George Floyd in America, there's been a real, you know, in the rise of Black, what's it called, Black Lives Matter and all of that. It's been a very interesting time, because there's never been a time in my experience of history where people, let's just say people in minority places or with minority voices, have had such a platform to speak. But at the same time, I've never lived through a time in history where there's been, where so many of us are actually scared to speak. We're scared to say what we really think, what our life experiences are, because we're frightened we're going to be cancelled. So we've never lived in such a polarized time, which I think, you know, is actually quite a dangerous thing for people to feel scared to speak. And that's the beauty of what we've created with the making of Black Britain. It's a space where everybody can be heard without being criticized or cancelled, because all we're doing is asking for people to share their life experience, and nobody can doubt that. Nobody can tell you you're wrong to be who you are.
And I noticed one of the things you're doing is actually sort of going out and about. For example, I think you've set up a partnership with Tesco supermarket. There's a Tesco on every street corner in Cambridge, as you well know. But it's a place, I guess, the workplace. And I've spoken to supermarkets behind the scenes, if you like, before, and they do. There's just a strange camaraderie which is there. So this idea of then bringing them all together to talk about their history. History must sort of bring out some really fascinating stories.
Well, also, it's really interesting what you've said, particularly with Tesco, because it is the UK's largest private employer. It's one of the largest employers in the country. And as you say, there's a Tesco on every corner. So in a sense, Tesco, the staff, their customers, they absolutely represent a cross-section of the British public. And we're really delighted that the CEO, Jason Tarry, he's the CEO of Tesco UK and Ireland, he's right behind this. Tesco are really committed to literally hearing what their staff, what they think, and they really want to know who they are. And he's totally leading the way on this as well. And you're right. There's nowhere better than the workplace to really get a cross-section of who we are. And it's a place where, again, we really need to listen to one another. So it's fantastic what's happening within Tesco. We're having people who are being really honest with each other. But being really gentle with each other is a really safe space to speak and listen, because they're doing it through the making of Black Britain, this storytelling program. And we would love to, do the same with every other employer throughout the UK. So, you know, if you're an employer out there and you really want to get to know your staff and really, you know, have a foundation where you can all work together for the greater good, then please get in touch.
As you know, Cambridge is very much sort of a melting pot of people from all from all cultures. You told us a little bit about your own background and that of your parents. I'm wondering if there's a particular story, this is the pick your favourite child question really, if there's a particular story which has been contributed to the making of Black Britain, which has jumped out on you and has either resonated with you or you've stood back and think, oh my goodness.
Well, I'll tell you why I actually even started this story collection in the first place. Is because when, you know, as a young girl, I was born in Britain, you know, Black British, first generation. My parents, as I said, they came from the Caribbean as migrants, not immigrants. And even as a little girl back in the early 60s, and I didn't live in Cambridgeshire then, but I lived in the home counties. And I had many beautiful friends, mostly white, because we lived in, you know, very few Black people in our community. But I had a really nice, you know, I had great friends. I loved school and all the rest of it. But I was very much aware that I was slightly different, a slightly different type of British. I had two girlfriends who I'm still friends with now. And one came from then former Yugoslavia and the other one was German. And their parents were actually foreign. We weren't. And yet we've talked about this. They've really they've assimilated and their children and grandchildren have assimilated much easier then, you know, they're now just British, whereas we still have this label, Black British. So I was always interested in being not quite, you know, British, but then, and my parents used to always talk about, oh, well, back home. And, you know, I always imagined that Jamaica was back home. And it was quite interesting because when I was about seven, my sister and I actually, had the opportunity to go to Jamaica for the first time. And I promise you, we were literally just getting off the plane and somebody, worker at the airport, pointed out to us and said, oh, look at those little English girls. And I just thought, I haven't even opened my mouth. And, you know, they know that I'm a foreigner. So, you know, I didn't quite fit in either place, but also felt an association with both places. And that was the thing that started me really wanting to find out from my parents, you know, well, what was life back home there? And, you know, and for me to really start, you know, questioning if other people had the same sort of experience. And I realized that, yes, of course, there were many more like me. And so many of us in Britain, we're all interconnected with each other's stories. So, you know, it's, although I call it the making of Black Britain, it's a story that affects all of us. We're all interconnected. And so to make sense of my story, I need to hear your story. And for you to make sense of your story, you need to hear my story.
Yeah. And can people just contribute, or do they have to wait for you to come to them?
We'd love people to contribute. I'm quite often, you know, accost taxi drivers and supermarket assistants. You know, the local co-op.
Whip out the microphone and just get their voices.
Well, what I do actually, you know, like if I'm in my local Tesco or something or wherever, I just say, "Oh, would you like to be involved?" And you know, obviously we exchange details and then we actually arrange to sit. Visit them in their home or somewhere where they feel comfortable and get their stories. But we do, you know, they can come to the Making of Black Britain website, and there is a space there where people can, contact us to share their stories. And people do. It's been amazing. Yeah.
It really is great. I love stuff like this. At the moment, the local historian is going down our street making blue plaques and stuff of people who lived in this sort of Cambridge terraced houses once upon a time. So the history of anything, of anybody, is thoroughly fascinating.
Yeah, I think that's where there's such a rise in, you know, people looking to find out what their, you know, what their history is. You know, that's why programs like what's it called?
Oh, Who Do You Think You Are? Oh, yes.
That's why they're so important. And what's beautiful about this story collection is that once you've recorded your story, we give you a copy of that story. Of course, it's going to be on the main platform, on Google's platform, but we actually give you your story. So you have got like your own living archive to leave for your own family and also other members of your family, because we love to capture stories of generations. So if there's a granddad or grandma and the parent and the child, we'd love the whole family story. And then you have that to pass on to your next generation. And because it's a living archive, if you want to come back and tell your story again in 5 years' time, we'd be welcome. We'd love to have you.
No, absolutely. It's like one of those little boxes you used to bury in the Blue Peter Garden, isn't it?
A collection of... But you know what? It's even better than that, because the point is that, you know, as I just said, you can come back and tell your story again. It's like a living archive, because if you were just to capture my story, if I say you asked me about my life 10 years ago, I would have told you how life was. And that would have been true for that moment in history. But as you know, we all evolve. We, you know, life affects how we see life and what our experiences are. So I think to get a fuller picture of someone is to let them come back time and time again, to keep recording their stories. And can you imagine, by doing that, the sort of rich texture of life that we're leaving as a legacy for the for generations beyond us? It's going to be the most mind-blowing way to share history.
Fantastic. Diane, thank you so much for joining us this morning on Cambridge 105 Radio. Fascinating to hear about the making of blackbritain.org, if you want to find it. It's very easy. Just Google it, really. Diane Louise Jordan, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. And thank you, Tesco.
Dear. Citizen Fiverr. Thank you. Bye. It's 9:23 now.
Cambridge 105 Radio.